your feelings about the rule book being referred to the Restrictive Practices Court?
Well, I obviously became more aware of this wearing my counsel hat than I did my own firm's hat. I don't think we'd even know what the Restrictive Practices Court was in 1976. It just didn't mean anything to us. But up in the council, we did become aware of it. And again, I don't think we thought it was frightfully important. But as we became more and more aware of what it meant, and that ultimately we would have to defend our practices in front of a court, which may or may not determine whether they're fair or not. When that became apparent in sort of probably 77, 78, as late as that, I think the jobbing system began to realize that this could be pretty serious. During the period 75 through to 77, the jobbing system came under a great deal of strain anyway. There wasn't a great deal of business around. The older fraternity were wanting to move on and retire, take their capital out of the firms, and very much bearing in mind that every company was still unlimited liability companies. And we'd all gone through a very long period of extremely high taxation. So for youngsters to be able to create any wealth to keep in of a jobbing firm was damn near impossible. We were effectively, as you know, paying 98p in the pound if you were successful. So there wasn't much fat left over to increase the capital of the jobbing partnerships. So we were under great strain as jobbers without a continuing growth of business and activity during that period. And more importantly than that, I think that because we had been referred to the courts, the council as the regulatory body and the decision-making body felt that it was more and more being restrained and hamstrung. It couldn't make any decisions which would allow for change in the market, would allow the market to evolve. 75, New York, negotiated commissions. What was that going to mean in London? Something was going to change. You're going to have all the American firms over here. We're no longer charging fixed commissions. They could negotiate, not just for American shares, they could negotiate for our British stocks in ADR form. So there became more and more of awareness that we were actually losing a bit of business to the Americans. We'd seen the creation in 73-4 of the options markets. What was that going to mean to London? There was this new animal trade options market. How is that going to affect London? What should we do to combat it? And in 1975-6 in the council, we thought we should actually have a jobbing market, a traded options market in London. And there was very much a view that we should do this with Amsterdam and create a big, successful, or potentially successful, traded options market in Europe. So, good idea. What were we going to do with the international community in dealing in foreign shares? Something very close to my heart. Should we move more towards negotiated commissions for deals in foreign securities here in London? Should we have more of a dual capacity approach to it for the brokers and the jobbers? So these were all ideas which were being mandated around the exchange and being pushed through from the practitioners themselves. But the stock exchange, who set up little committees to look at all these things, felt totally unable to make any positive decisions to move forward, because it might so alter the rule book at a time where you were trying to defend what was good about your system of single capacity, fixed commissions, closed membership, and all that sort of thing. So quite a few of the fairly progressive proposals which were coming through the various committees at that time to create change, to allow this market to evolve, were blocked. And this went right the way through to 79, 80, you know, we got a conservative government came in, whoopee, it's all going to change now, we won't be referred to this stupid court anymore. it's all going to be systems go, boys. But, well, we all know that from history point of view, that didn't happen. We were still referred to this damn silly court. And so more actively, we got the lawyers in and, you know, let's look at the rules. More actively, the council said, you can't change any damn thing at all. Even putting up commission rates, no, we better not do that. Or doing away with them altogether. So it became a very frustrating period for the members of the exchange and the Stock Exchange Council, right up until that momentous decision in 1983 between Parkinson and Goodison. But I mean, we've taken a huge leap here from sort of 76 to 83. But virtually nothing happened between that period. We did start up a traded options market. We didn't go into it with the Dutch, because the Dutch were going into it very much on a dual capacity approach to it. Their so-called market makers could be brokers as well. They didn't have any restrictions. They could do what they like. We felt it very dangerous to go down that route, and so we set up a market making system based traded options market where only the jobbers could be market makers. There was one exception to that, a firm called Vickers, which set up a subsidiary which would sort of seem to be more like a jobber than a broker. So the traded options market, with lots of thought and planning as to how it should work, was restricted by a very small community of market makers, i.e. the jobbers, who probably had a terrible conflict of interest because they were making markets in the underlying stock. And it was their fellow members of the same firm that were making markets in the traded option. And of course, the taxation rules at the time were not at all conducive to developing a healthy traded options market, which was out of the stock exchange control. And we pushed for change all the time, but it was not easy to get that change. So we had this other animal, which was restricted by our membership rules, which wouldn't allow any new members to come in unless they were full members of the stock exchange, and then they had to be unlimited liability firms, and so nobody new came in, and very much restricted to it being fixed commissions and single capacity.
Had your access to, had the jobbers' access to the overseas markets been improved in any way?
No, I was still the only jobber that had an overseas office. No one else took up the running at this stage. In the early 80s, Smith opened up and Wed opened up but soon closed down again. So we were the only ones that had a continuing and, might I say, successful operation over there. It always made money, thank God. So that was good. But no, other jobbers hadn't taken that direction, moved in that direction. So I remember in the late 70s, whether it was 78 or when we had a Conservative government in 79, in a crisis meetings of jobbers, because we couldn't afford to see one more go. There were effectively only five. I had merged into Ackroyd and Smithers in late 76, effectively Jan 1977. So I was the sixth one and had gone. We were aware that Smith Brothers and Bisgood were in talks to merge, and of course they referred that to the Monopolies Commission, so that was another unfortunate thing that happened to the Stock Exchange. And when the Monopolies Commission said that it would be perfectly all right, of course Smith Brothers and Bisgood were not too sure they wanted to do it anyway, and they didn't do it, and so we didn't have a merger there. I think it was very fortunate for Bisgood that the unlisted securities market started up at about that time, and it gave them a new lease of life, and the other jobbers quite deliberately stood away from that market so that Bisgood had a free run at it, because they were under a certain amount of strain in their more traditional types of shares which they were jobbing in. And that was a tremendous boost to them, and it was quite a success, and that was probably one of the good things that the Stock Exchange did do at that time, the council, in creating this unlisted securities market. It was again useful in 1979 when there was the abolition of exchange control, because that made foreign shares again more attractive to the investor. And there was no sort of worry about going through the premium market. So that did give a little bit of a push to that type of business. But it was a double-edged sword, because the foreign community, the non-members of the exchanges, these big international houses which were present here, had been present by and large to deal in and promote shares of their own country. But when exchange control had disappeared, they were getting far more interest in dealing in their own Americans or Canadian shares from the big British institutions direct, not going through the broking or jobbing system, unfortunately. And as a return for that, these big foreign firms, and because there was no exchange control and no problems, and they were dealing in a negotiated commission way, they felt it was appropriate to expand into British stocks. And the big British stocks in the early 80s, the BPs and the ICIs and the Glaxos, there were many times when more than 50% of the daily trade was taking place in New York. More business going away from the jobbing system at a time where we could ill afford to lose business. Something had to be done about it. So we were in great state of flux in the late 70s, early 80s, in trying to defend a system which, in our heart of hearts, we believe was right to defend. There was a lot of good in single capacity. There was a lot of good in fixed commissions. But we were fully aware that we were losing out to different systems. So what on earth could we do about this? And there were those that said that we should abandon the case and not try to defend it and go down the dual capacity route, you know, before the deal with Parkinson. But the majority of people in the council felt that would not be appropriate, and that we'd spend a lot of money in defending the case, and it would probably hurt the smaller jobbers and the smaller brokers if we did go straight into dual capacity. So we did go full speed ahead to try to defend it. And then the deal came with Parkinson in the early summer of 1983, and that, of course, led to Big Bang. It seemed a relief to us at the time that we would not have to defend ourselves in the courts. And in fairness, the deal which Nicholas Gerson came to was very much only on two fronts: to have negotiated commissions and to open our membership doors to allow virtually anyone that wanted to and had the right sort of resources to come into the exchange. There was no suggestion that we should do away with dual capacity, single capacity. And it was only in some very in-depth discussions in the Stock Exchange Council during the summer and autumn of 1983 that we developed the link argument. Mm. And the link argument, which was going to be one of the arguments which we were going to use to defend our case, that, you know, you couldn't just go down and negotiate commissions because it would destroy the jobbing system. It had been fairly well thought through. And now that we come to this agreement, we revisited that and say, well, hang on, this was going to be the major plank of our defense. It still exists. So how do you go down and negotiate commissions? How do you allow all these non-members to join our club, if you like, without going into dual capacity? And we were sort of stuck with that one, I'm afraid. So it was felt that in a negotiated commission world, it was quite likely that the big brokers, if we had single capacity, the big brokers would more and more be forced down the route of net dealing, not charging a commission to be competitive. And if they're going to be net dealing, they're going to be running positions. So if they're running positions and they have access to all the clients out there in the world, well, there's not much point having a jobber. So that was the link. So the jobbers, I think, probably forced the pace more than the brokers and said, we better get this, you know, head on and do away with single capacity by 1986 as well. There was a view that we should do it step by step. We should do it in certain securities, or we should reduce commissions. But at the end of the day, it was thought that you'd have such distortions in the markets if you had negotiated commissions in the gilt market or the chemical market or whatever you wanted to call it. What that negotiated commission would be is nil, because everyone would say, well, we're giving you all the commission in the ones which still have fixed commission. So there was a lot of logic in that argument. And so it was thought we'd do it all in one day and have a big bang approach to this, and hence the name Big Bang. And we all agreed on that. And so that's the way we went. And we agreed that it would all be in place by the end of 1986. Mm. And it did. It happened. And the single capacity system, you know, went out with the bathwater.
Mm. Should we break there for the moment?